But first, and urgently, to Bruce Shapiro, standing by in Connecticut to take us into the latest episode of the Epstein saga. Bruce, where are we?
We are in the space of complete reversal by President Trump, who only, of course, days ago was fighting tooth and nail to prevent the release of whatever files the government still holds on Jeffrey Epstein and his victims, the Epstein files. He now faced a complete revolt by the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives, which joined with Democrats. Congress voted with only one opposing vote to request that the files on the Jeffrey Epstein investigations all be released. And now it's going to the Senate. The Senate has approved it as well. The Republicans joining with Chuck Schumer, the Democratic majority leader.
Unanimously.
We saw today on the steps of the Capitol an extraordinary press conference by women who had been trafficked, abused, and assaulted by Jeffrey Epstein over the course of his long career prior to his death. They spoke with great eloquence about their long and patient search for justice, and they were joined by a bipartisan group of representatives, Thomas Massie, a Republican, Ro Khanna, a progressive Democrat, who had been campaigning seemingly uphill for months and suddenly saw the tide turn. Of course, this doesn't mean the files will actually be released. There's a,
I want to dig down into that because, where are the files? Are they safe?
There's lots of files, right? I mean, there's the files that the government has. There's the files perhaps that his estate still has. We've seen emails over the last week that the estate of Jeffrey Epstein had supplied to Congress, those emails that not only touched on President Trump and the quoted Epstein as saying that Trump knew about the girls, which it's hard to evaluate the factuality of that. But they've already had the collateral effect those email has of have not only affecting Donald Trump, but one of his ideological opponents, Larry Summers, the former president of Harvard, former Treasury secretary, who was one of the many elite power players caught up in Jeffrey Epstein's seductive power games. And I think that this goes to the heart of why the Epstein case has been so sticky for Donald Trump, why he hasn't been able to escape it, right? On the one hand, you could just say, well, he tried to ride the conspiracy dragon and he finally couldn't control it. But there's more to it than that. When we saw those women stand in front of the Capitol today, what we were reminded of was how the incredible power that victims of crime have sometimes had in American politics, undoing presidents on the right and on the left. And also that this episode speaks, I think, to the culture of impunity at the highest levels of power in America, whether it is Donald Trump, whether it is the people who brought us to torture and war in Iraq, whether it is Silicon Valley oligarchs, there is widespread perception of a culture of impunity. And this case suddenly has become a surrogate for all of that. And that has turned out to be something that Donald Trump, despite his desire to not have the public remember that he's a convicted sexual offender himself, that's something that turned out to be overwhelming that he couldn't even control in his own caucus.
Is one of the aspects of this that he has led this deeply paradoxical political existence getting votes by condemning elites, by convincing people in America that he understands how they have been burnt by the elites, while gathering an elite force around him and legislating for their benefit the entire time. And this is, in a way, the proof of the things that Trump has been saying about the elites in this bizarre upside-down politics.
Well, indeed, and that is what is fracturing the MAGA base, right? That is why we saw three of the most vociferously MAGA of MAGA women in Congress: Nancy Mace from South Carolina, Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia. Why these women who are on the sort of populist, anti-elite end of MAGA finally felt discarded and ignored by the White House on this issue. And of course, in the case of Marjorie Taylor Greene, a spectacularly loyal Trump conspiracy mongering ally, the president did what he does so often to women. He dismissed her with a lot of derogatory language about her mental health. And that's why we're seeing the MAGA base split. We should say, however, that, you know, this case is just, it does touch the Democratic base as well, because after all, you have your Silicon Valley billionaires, you have your Larry Summers, you have Clinton and others who were in these circles of elite communication around this billionaire sexual predator. And nobody comes out especially well in this. You get the, you know, on the one hand, the appearance of Democratic unity on this issue, even as just a week ago, Democrats split over ending the government shutdown. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of theater going on here.
Before we get to the shutdown, let's put our hard journalistic hats on here and evaluate what we know already about Trump from those Epstein files that have been released. Would you agree? There's a lot of smoke there, but we really haven't seen much fire.
No, we have not. You know, we have to say that there has not been a living witness who has come forward to say that they were abused by Trump in Jeffrey Epstein's company. Virginia Giuffre, is cited in one of these emails as having spent a lot of time with Trump, but she was on record saying that Trump never did anything improper.
Yep.
You know, it's not clear whether there actually is going to be anything that directly implicates the president. You know, it reminds me in a certain way of the you know, the Steele dossier in the first term. We may not know what really happened. But I think the power of the Epstein case is because, for all of these complicated reasons, but at bottom, what we do know is that Trump was part of this community, had a close relationship with Epstein, ultimately had a rupture with him. But we also know that Epstein's attitudes towards women and his uses and abuses of women were mirrored in Trump's behavior and attitudes. I mean, look, as recently as Tuesday at a press conference involving the Saudi Arabia and the visit of MBS to the White House, the president called a female journalist a piggy, right? Yep. Someone who takes off after women and in many ways based his whole campaign on what he presumed to be a kind of unstoppable public appetite for anti-feminist backlash. Will the Epstein case in an enduring way divide some parts of his base and divide the American public outrage the American public sufficiently to keep to damage him in the long run, we'll need to see. Mm. But it certainly led to this unusual spectacle of the president in the face of a defeat in his own caucus, beating a hasty retreat and turning his own position around.
And of course, somehow in all of this tangle, we mustn't forget that he has become president twice by beating women.
Indeed. And as I say, that's because that's why the question of misogyny and sexual abuse of women and derisive language directed at women and the kind of attitudes reflected by Larry Summers and Jeffrey Epstein in their email exchanges, why those are so potent right now. Is there going to be some kind of political accountability for this? We'll need to see. I have to say, in some ways, as important as this is, and especially coming after a couple of weeks in which the president's fortunes really do seem to have taken a downturn, beginning with the elections only 2 weeks ago in New York and Virginia.
Which were shattering for him, surely.
Which were very damaging for the Republican Party and for Trump. Now this, in some ways, even more important, which the Epstein saga has distracted from and which Trump is happy for the distraction from, have been a series of profound and stinging defeats over the last 7 days in federal courts around the country.
Now, Bruce, can we pause for 1 second for me to say that this is ABC Radio National. This is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr. You're Bruce Shapiro in the United States, telling us the latest in this extraordinary dramas of American politics. Bruce, continue. The courts have been looking at his actions once more and finding them wanting.
Well, and in particular, a whole raft of policies connected to immigration enforcement and related issues. But even more important than that, the investigation, the indictment of former FBI Director James Comey, a magistrate judge, a federal judge in Virginia, has voiced a concern that there may have been gross misconduct by the Justice Department. Misconduct is not something the Justice Department frequently gets charged with by a federal judge. That is quite consequential. We've never heard language like that. In the same week, federal judges in Memphis, in Chicago and elsewhere have further blocked the deployment of the National Guard and other elements of the immigration enforcement, the thuggish immigration enforcement theater that we saw playing out this week in the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina, over the course of the last month in Chicago with such extraordinary violence. The courts all around the country are taking notice and smacking this president back. Whether he ultimately wins, we don't know, but it has been a week of extraordinary defeats for his agenda in one court after another.
But Bruce, the pattern over this year has been defeats in the lower courts and rescue in the higher courts. Is there anything to suggest that that pattern will not continue?
Well, last week at the U.S. Supreme Court, there was a hearing over the single most important feature of Trump's economic policy, his tariffs, the infamous tariffs. And there, a majority of the U.S. Supreme Court, including conservative justices appointed by Trump himself, seemed deeply skeptical of the president's tariff policy. They pointed out in their questions, this isn't the ruling, this is just a hearing, but their questions indicated that the justices, even Trump-appointed justices, understand well that Congress has the taxing power under the U.S. Constitution, that the various laws allowing the president to act in emergencies probably don't apply in the all of the circumstances in which the president has reached into that emergency grab bag to impose tariffs on the world economy. This is lining up to be an epic defeat for the central plank of Trump economic policy. So on that one, at least, a Supreme Court that has been extraordinarily deferential to executive power to this point does seem ready to break with the president.
Bruce, you know that pattern. We've seen it again and again and again, where authoritarian leaders begin to be defeated. At home, they like to fight abroad. What is that aircraft carrier doing off the coast of Venezuela?
Well, again, Trump, the master of distraction, understands that you got to keep the story moving. And we are seeing a steady escalation of violence in the Caribbean. We now have seen more than a dozen boats, significant numbers of people killed in drone strikes, which, again, even Republicans in Congress are beginning to say represent an extra legal use of power by the president.
He has no authority to do it.
He has no authority. Well, not only does he have no authority to do it, but there's been no evidence presented that these boats were actually up to anything, right? In one case, there's at least one case of a Colombian fisherman whose family is suing in American courts because he was killed in one of these drone strikes. Of course, what it's all ramping up for is the possibility of military confrontation with Venezuela, with President Maduro, who, you know, in turn stood before the microphone and in a almost Trump-worthy moment, stood there singing John Lennon's Imagine in response to Trump's latest threats, right? Here again, there's a deep threat of fracturing the MAGA base. I mean, you do have to remember that MAGA is an isolationist movement.
They don't like foreign wars.
Yeah. And the, you know, projection of power and of nation building and all of that in Iraq was one of the betrayals and sources of disillusionment which fed the what became the MAGA movement. So this is a risky strategy for Trump, too. My own guess is that Trump himself will not have an appetite for a big war in Venezuela, that this is about saber-rattling theater. But we're entering unpredictable territory with a president who does seem to be suddenly flailing in several important areas, and we don't know how Trump is going to react.
Bruce, thank you once again for,
as always,
I'm going to say it, making sense of the United States of America and its politics. Bruce Shapiro is, of course, contributing editor at The Nation and executive director at the Global Center for Journalism and Trauma.